I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Akira Murray was the youngest victim of the Orlando mass shooting on Sunday. She had just graduated from West Catholic Preparatory High School in Philadelphia and was celebrating at Pulse with a cousin and close friend. She was a standout student and basketball player headed for college in the fall. She was one of 49 victims, mostly LGBT and Latino, gunned down in the prime of their life, enjoying Latin night at a popular and welcoming club. Today on Radio Times, how Philadelphia's LGBT and Latino communities are responding to the events of the week, including the reactions from political leaders. And we have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Nellie Fitzpatrick is Director of LGBT Affairs for the City of Philadelphia. Nellie, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning. Also with us is Sabrina Vavoulias, and she's Metro columnist at Philadelphia Magazine, also a contributing writer at City and State PA Magazine, and The Guardian U.S. And Sabrina, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Nellie, let me begin with you. I'll begin actually with both of you, because during this week we've read the profiles of some of these victims. I highlighted just the tiniest parts of Akira's life. Mm. We're also hearing from survivors about what it was to see their friends and colleagues gunned down, the kind of eloquence and the suffering. What are your thoughts as we get to Friday, 5 days after this event?
It's a devastating moment. It's a devastating moment for our nation. It's a devastating moment for the LGBTQ communities as a whole. And it's an extremely devastating moment for the Latinx communities, especially those who are LGBT. The impact that this is having is profound. Not only the pain of this vicious, horrific attack, but the pain that it's dredging up, the decades of suffering that a lot of folks have gone through, the history of violence, whether or not because you are LGBT or queer or because you are a person of color, it's really bringing out profound pain right now. And people are grieving. People are angry. And it's a very, very difficult moment.
Can you speak to that, Sabrina?
Yeah, I've heard actually amid the devastation of this, and amid the anger, a lot of anger also about the erasure of the Latinos. And, you know, we have to really think that, 90% of the victims of this shooting were Latinos. That includes Mexicans, undocumented folks, Salvadorans. And then nearly half are Boricuas, are Puerto Ricanos. And for us here in Philadelphia, that is our largest Latino population. And it is significant that fact has not been talked about.
Are you saying that when the media reports this or when people talk about it, they do not emphasize the fact that these were largely Latino victims?
Absolutely. It's gotten a little bit better in the past few days. I've seen a few more pieces that really focus on that. But that really has come from the fact that there are a number of Latinx LGBT activists and people speaking out about that erasure. And, I think it raises the question of why we're talking about a lot of ancillary issues in terms of the shooter, but we're not talking about a lot of issues that are about really the population that was decimated.
Well, and what we hear, certainly from people who survived this or people that were familiar with Pulse, was that it was a place where people could be safe and be themselves, and where they might not want to hold hands in public. They felt like they could be affectionate and have fun with each other inside this club. And I also think of other mass shootings, a first grade, for goodness sake, a church, a movie theater. I mean, these are places where people feel safe, and yet on that, horrible, 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, that was penetrated.
It absolutely was. Gay bars, LGBT bars, historically are places where people who maybe don't feel safe gathering in other settings and other places, in their schools, in their churches, at their work, are able to come together, let their guard down, and be who they are. am seeing all over social media folks sharing this particular picture that says, where was your first gay bar? And folks are remembering back decades to the first time they went into a space and could see men dancing and celebrating together, women holding hands, to see people being who they are, being trans, being queer, and being happy and safe. And that space was destroyed in Orlando, in Paul's. And the extra layer of it being a Latin night, being a place where community within community within community comes together and finds such incredible strength and celebration is devastating. LGBT bars, unfortunately, have also been historically targeted, and they've been places of violence. LGBT communities have seen parts of our civil rights movement grow out of violence, starting with Stonewall riots. But it's important as we're looking back to see that queer people have been attacked for a very long time. 32 people were burned to death in a bar called the Upstairs Lounge in New Orleans in 1973. There was a bombing in 1997 in Atlanta at the Other Side Lounge, which was a predominantly lesbian bar. There was an individual who opened fire at the Backstreet Cafe in Roanoke 3 years after that 1997 bombing. And even 2013, there was another arson at Neighbors, a gay bar in Seattle. The list is very long. These places are targeted and people are hurt because of the historic, systematic, and quite frankly, validated violence against LGBT people, against minorities, by everything from our faith-based communities and religion to politicians.
Well, and picking up on what you have both said, I'm also thinking there were a number of political leaders who would not say, maybe they haven't said, or it took them several days to say, a gay club or a gay bar or LGBT. Some, you know, many people did, but some were reluctant to do that. Sabrina, I'm looking at you. What does that tell you?
Well, first of all, it tells me how out of touch they are, because if they think that that nobody noticed within and without the LGBT community, they're quite wrong. Personally, I was really floored to find out that within the Catholic Church, which is, you know, Puerto Ricanos, Boricuas, at least my generation, are very religious, that really only one of the bishops, as far as I know, Bishop Lynch from St. Petersburg, has in his statement specified that these were LGBT victims, and also spoke a little bit about, you know, sort of I don't know if guilt is too strong a word, but but the responsibility church leaders bear in the way LGBT folks are viewed. And I think this is very significant. Just look at the choice of language. I think I have seen more people describe Pulse as a sanctuary.
Instead of a club?
That's right. And for me, this is very much a generational thing. You know, the parents of the people who were there would describe the church as a sanctuary. The people who by and large, the vast majority of them who were killed in Pulse and felt it was a sanctuary, that was the community and the sense of connection that in previous generations we've gotten from the church. Mm-hmm. And so to not hear the church understand or even articulate that these were the victims is really difficult. And it's something that I think, you know, that the Latino community, the non-LGBT Latino community has also noticed.
Let me ask about words, and only because, not to be politically correct, but to be correct, which is obviously the most important thing. You used, Nellie, the word queer.
Correct.
And I've heard more people using that word queer in the last couple of weeks. Is that the word we should be using? Is that the word that, that, that heterosexuals should be using when talking about this?
Queer is a word that you can use if that's how people are identifying. It's that simple. If folks identify as queer, then that is how you should be speaking about them. I understand that a lot of people recoil when they hear the word queer. They don't understand. And queer, by definition, means odd. And it was used as a derogatory term for LGBT people. It's a term that has been reclaimed. It is a term that encompasses many orientations or identities. And it's an important term. It's a powerful term. And so folks who identify as queer, you should identify mm-hmm. them as queer. Listen, when people tell you who they are, listen and make sure that you speak about them in the way that they identify.
There's also another word, Sabrina, and this is the word Latinx, L-A-T-I-N-X.
Right.
New word for me, but go ahead.
Well, because Spanish is gendered, so, you know, Latino generally refers to men, Latina refers to women. Latinx is the most encompassing and inclusive term. But, you know, having said that, let me just say that there's a lot of buzz within the Latino community and within the Latinx community and LGBT community about, again, about naming Mexicanos, Salvadoreños, you know, Puerto Riqueños or Boricuas to make – because – In a lot of ways, Latinx is an umbrella term,
right.
and it despite not wanting to, it erases the identity of those that we call Latinos or Latinx or Latinx.
Latinx and words matter as we know. Nellie, we're about a minute away from our first break here, but what do you make of the fact that some people were just so reluctant to say this word? Gay in describing the victims?
It's very frustrating. You know, I watched the press conference, I believe it was Monday morning, when Governor Rick Scott of Florida, you know, stood before the cameras and talked about how the state of Florida, a state that I grew up in, is a melting pot and a wonderful place. And he recognized the Puerto Rican community and the fact that Orlando has a huge Puerto Rican community, a vibrant, beautiful Puerto Rican community. But he never once recognized LGBT people in that state. As somebody who grew up there, as somebody who has family there, to not hear somebody recognize who we are as a whole, it hurts. The same way people are erasing the Latinx community.
He did eventually. Took him a couple of days.
And probably a lot of prodding.
A lot of prodding in order for him to say that.
I would imagine.
Let's take a short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Nellie Fitzpatrick. She's Director of LGBT Affairs for the City of Philadelphia. Sabrina Vavouyas is a Metro columnist at Philadelphia Magazine. And we are talking about the Orlando tragedy on Sunday, the victims largely LGBT and Latinx. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. What have you been thinking about over the last 5 days? We want to hear from you. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And again, you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Our guest, Sabrina Vavouyas, talked about the fact that many of these or most of these victims were Latinx, a word we are learning today, and also the fact that in many ways they have been erased. And in order to fix that, she's going to read their names.
Stanley Almodovar III, Amanda Alvear, Oscar Aracena Montero, Rodolfo Ayala Ayala, Antonio Davon Brown, Daryl Roman Burt II, Angel Candelario Padro, Juan Chavez Martinez, Luis Daniel Conde, Corey James Connell. Devin Eugene Crosby, Dianca Deidre Drayton, Simon Adrian Carrillo Fernandez, Leroy Valentin Fernandez, Paul Terrell Henry, Frank Hernandez, Miguel Angel Honorato, Javier Jorge Reyes, Jason Benjamin Josephat, Eddie Jamal Droy Justice, Anthony Luis Laureano Disla, Christopher Andrew Leinonen, Alejandro Barrios Martinez, Brenda Lee Marquez McCool, Gilberto Ramon Silva Menendez, Kimberly Morris, Akira Monet Murray, Luis Omar Ocasio Capo, Geraldo Ortiz Jimenez, Eric Ivan Ortiz Rivera, Jean Nieves Rodriguez, Javier Emanuel Serrano Rosado, Christopher Joseph Sanfeliz, Gilmari Rodriguez Sullivan, Edward Sotomayor Jr., Shane Evan Tomlinson, Martin Benitez Torres, Jonathan Antonio Camuy Vega, Juan Rivera Velázquez, Luis Bielma, Frankie Jimmy de Jesús Velázquez.
49 victims, and as we could tell from their names, many of them Latino. Also, Nellie, we have learned just so young. I mean, 20s and 30-year-old, these were people just starting out their life.
Yes, too young.
Too young, too young. You had mentioned, and this goes back to 1973, this was this lounge in New Orleans. I'm looking at New York Times that did some coverage of this. Back in 73, and I'm quoting here, some relatives refused to claim the bodies of their gay sons, banishing them to Potter's Fields, and the New Orleans community joked that the ashes of the dead would be buried in fruit jars. Have we made progress since 1973?
I believe so, of course. We have absolutely made progress. We've made tremendous progress, and our ability to have come as far as we have only highlights the incredible work ahead to make sure that everybody is able to achieve and participate in the progress and the success that has been made. There's tremendous work within the LGBT community to truly understand what racial justice is and what we need to do to get there. We have work to do in poverty, in immigration. We are all people. The LGBT community is as diverse and wide as the entire population of the world. And so while some LGBT people are able to benefit a great deal from the progress we've made, others are not. And it's incumbent upon us and the shoulders of the people that we stand on to keep moving and to really tackle a lot of the issues that are ahead of us, even within our own communities.
Orlando has been described as you know, a friendly, welcoming place. Do you think Philadelphia is?
I think it is, and I think that we need to keep working to make it more friendly. You know, 35 years ago, an organization called Men of All Colors Together was formed to combat racial discrimination within our LGBT bars, within our own queer spaces. And that work still must go on today. We still have issues within our community of discrimination, of really unacceptable othering within our community. So we have a lot of work to do. Hmm. We really do. And it's going to really require us leaning on the elders in our community, learning from them, learning what our history collectively truly is, learning what we need to do and coming together. None of us can do this alone, not one community, not one orientation or identity or race. It's going to require all of us moving forward.
Well, you raised this during the break and talking about work that we all need to mm-hmm. do. You said, why is there no queer Latino on this show?
That's right.
And there isn't. And our mistake. I mean, I'll just put it up front in terms of thinking through the show, thinking as the week went on, how are we going to do this? And we did not do that.
Right. And next time, I know that a lot of folks out there listening, we all know a lot of incredibly powerful LGBT, queer, Latinx, Latino, Latina, Puerto Rican, Mexican.
There you go.
I mean, powerful people, and they need to be heard from. And I'm hoping that everybody who is listening to this actually starts listening. listening to the voices of the people who are here, who are powerful, who are beautiful, and who deserve to be at the front.
Go ahead, Sabrina.
I just wanted to mention a number of organizations and people. Mm-hmm. So Luis Ortiz Fonseca, who is from the Gran Barones, has been very vocal and really, really, I think, has been willing to do some really hard work within the Latinx community about, you know, really talking about the aspects of this that are really difficult for us. And, you know, I'd also say that Rafael Alvarez, who is, I believe, on the board of Galay, which is a queer social justice organization in Philadelphia that does a lot. You know, people like Miguel Andrade, who was the interim director of Galay for a while. All of these are Latinx LGBT men who have really, really, I think, thought very deeply about this, and it's worthwhile to go on to the websites and check the different statements.
Absolutely. And there's a million other names that could be read, and it's important to recognize that we have very powerful female leaders as well. Alicia Gonzalez, the former director of Galay, Dejalyn Alvarez, a trans woman who works for the city and also is the director of the only LGBT homeless shelter and recovery house here in the city of Philadelphia for the entire state of Pennsylvania. There are very powerful voices out there. The list can go on, and I'm sure that, you know, WHYY would be happy to serve as a hub of information. And our city is a profoundly powerful city with profoundly powerful voices. And I'm hoping that Philadelphia will be able to step up and step forward as they have been doing forever, and that maybe out of tragedy, people will learn to listen.
Mm. Listening. Nellie Fitzpatrick, Director of LGBT Affairs for the City of Philadelphia. Sabrina Vivullas, Metro columnist at Philadelphia Magazine. We are talking about what has happened, certainly what transpired on Sunday in Orlando, lessons learned, not learned, certainly going forward, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us to join the conversation at WHYY Radio Times. Certainly much that we are talking about. Sabrina, I mean, there's much we don't know about the shooter. Some things are beginning to come into play. From what you know, do you think these people were targeted because they were Latino? Do you think there was something in his thinking that got him to this bar with his guns?
I do. I think that they were targeted because they were Latinx LGBT folks. We're starting to learn that he had been to the bar before, that he had some knowledge of it. It's hard to think that it's a coincidence that he selected the Latino night, or Latin night, I think. You know, the poster, the promotional poster for it, showed trans women of color. Mm-hmm. on it. You know, I think one of the things that we need to talk about as a consequence of this are certain things that we don't talk about frequently. You know, the rate of, you know, violence against trans women of color, Black and Latinx in the majority. It's something that I'm only starting to see now, the stats being sort of more widely disseminated. I would like to talk about, you know, some of the consequences that, you know, some of the stuff that we need to be thinking about now. For example, the undocumented victims, you know, repatriation to their country of origin is proving to be huge. And, you know, for the hospitalized victims, not only the undocumented, but all of a sudden employment is a question because Florida, you know, has no employment protection for LGBT folks.
So, nor does Pennsylvania.
I was going to say, yeah.
I was
nor does Pennsylvania, right. Just to underscore that, saying that, that perhaps an employer realizes that one of these victims was at a was at Pulse.
Exactly. And so they could come out of a period of intense mourning, PTSD, dealing with survivor guilt, and having to then face the fact that their employer, you know, has decided to release them.
Well, and Nellie, I was also reading that not for some, this was their family's first realization that a member of their family was gay or bisexual or transgender, lesbian. So for that, this was sort of a, it's an outing in certain kinds of ways.
It is. It is. It's very, very difficult. You know, a lot of young LGBT people are out to their friends or out in the spaces where they are able to be out, such as a gay bar, and not to their families yet. Some of those youth are thrown out of their houses, are in places of danger when their identities or their orientations are either discovered, perceived, or revealed. And that's something that we need to be focusing on going ahead. It's devastating to think of these young people virtually dying alone, families who did not know who they really were. You know, it's devastating. It's just devastating. And I think as LGBT people as a whole, you know, we watch our worth debated on television and in houses of worship and by our elected officials. And while we are moving within multiple layers and intersections of hate and discrimination and oppression, in this moment, we are grieving. We are grieving. And nobody's grief is more or less. Nobody, this is not the suffering Olympics. Everybody is hurting. And, you know, I just saw somebody tweeted out on Twitter that, you know, normally they love this show, but they are just gorged on grief. It is very hard. And I hope that everybody who is hurting, because we all are, I am hurting, reaches out for help, calls hotlines if you need them, and know that you are absolutely not alone. For those folks out there who are straight or cisgender, reach out to your LGBT friends, your family, your acquaintances, the people you work with, and just ask if they're okay. Tell them that you love them. Tell them you support them. You don't need to do a lot. And I love you and I see you goes a very, very long way in this moment for people.
You know, I'm thinking, Sabrina, that the president was in Orlando yesterday. I think this is the 10th time he's had to go and sort of be the griever in chief, if I can put it that way, for the country, with the mass shootings that he's had to respond to. I believe he met with a lot of the families, and then he spoke to the public. I'm just curious about your thoughts about that, and I don't want to politicize this, but it got very quickly politicized.
I don't see how it can't be politicized. In all honesty, I mean, this is an act in a way of political power over, you know, marginalized groups for whatever the reason is. I think, you know, one of the things that I'd like to see is us not going into knee-jerk mode in terms of how we react to things. I have really fantastic people in my timelines on social media. But I will say that it immediately galled me that we went to the same gun
terrorism.
Controls, terrorism, Muslim. So, you know, and I have really enlightened friends, believe me. And it's not like any of them were going to this at, you know, in any other way. Or in a bad way, but we have sort of grooves that we talk about, and the Latinx community does as well. And one of the things I want to bring out is that, you know, it's on us, the non-LGBT Latinos and Latinas out there, to really, really own the fact that many of our young people, our nephews, our sons, our daughters, our you know, brothers and sisters aren't comfortable enough with us to be out with us. And, you know, I'm struck by the fact that in Puerto Rico, El Nuevo Día, which is the newspaper there, The mayor of San Juan talked about, you know, the level of machismo and the level of sort of homophobia within Puerto Rico, and that many of the young people who have left Puerto Rico have left because they feel so constrained and the homophobia is oppressive. Now, I don't want to reinforce stereotypes, because I think that it's very easy to do so. But I really think it's time for Latinos to step up. And, you know, there's even talk in the mayor was saying that there are members of some of the victims, family members in Puerto Rico who don't want to claim the bodies.
Sort of like in,
and this is, you know, and it's a small percentage, but this is really, this is a wake up call for us in terms of how we define family, because family is a huge part of Latino culture across the board, and I think it really calls for us to examine ourselves as the cisgender a part of the Latinx community.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Sabrina Vivullas, and she is Metro columnist at Philadelphia Magazine. Also with us is Nellie Fitzpatrick. She's director of LGBT affairs for the city of Philadelphia. We've been talking about, in many ways, what the country has been talking about. And of course, the tragedy in Orlando at Pulse early Sunday morning, and the various questions, concerns, worries, upset in the last 5 days. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with Nellie Fitzpatrick and Sabrina Vivullas, and we are talking about the events since, certainly the event on Sunday, the tragedy, the mass shooting at Pulse in Orlando, and what we have been learning over the last 5 days and what we need to learn moving forward. And again, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Nathan tweets, what your thoughts are about the criticism of the GOP hypocrisy embracing the LGBT community. Is it divisive to slap hands when we need unity? Do you want to take that, Nellie?
Sure. You know, it's very, very complicated, because it is hard to hear out of the mouths of people who have caused so much of this hate and caused people to be thrown out of their homes and who have perpetuated this horrible, hate-filled culture, now say anything about LGBT people. It smacks of insincerity. It feels as though our lives are being used for political gain. It is complicated. On the other hand, perhaps people are able to now start to learn about each other. In the work that I do, I am constantly in settings of trying to get people to a place of learning and understanding and growing. And I believe that it is possible. So while it is difficult when we see it in the media and being used in that way, I hope genuinely that maybe some folks will learn that instead of saying LGBT people are less, they don't deserve rights, they should be condemned, and keeping on with this talk of sinners and everything else, that instead, we can see everybody as human beings who deserve a wonderful life.
Sabrina, let me turn to you. And this is something that you wrote about in response to the Orlando shooting, raising questions about how immigrants have been talked about, frankly, how Donald Trump talked about Mexicans. Does that feed into, if not what happened, certainly our conversation about what happened?
Absolutely. I think it prepares the ground. And I would say that this is, you know, we get very used to hearing dehumanizing comments. And, you know, he starts out criticizing Mexicans. Not even, you know, like people have now retconned this to say, oh, it's only immigrants or undocumented immigrants. Not so. Mexicans, and we go on to Latin Americans in general. We go on to, you know, immigrants from the Middle East. And this really enables people. I think the more we hear it, the more normalized it gets. And I, you know, obviously, you know, this is an overlapping concern. The more normalized the idea that, you know, having a gender neutral bathroom suddenly opens it up to, you know, somebody who's predatory, you know, is again, it's a way to absolutely dehumanize, you know, human beings. And I do think it completely sets the groundwork for
and creates this narrative of the other, right?
And what's ridiculous, you know, I mean, recently there was a poll that said something like, you know, 43% of Americans don't know that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. And another, I can't remember the exact number, but another 10%. We're just simply not sure. And then the remainder just think that Puerto Rico has its own citizenship status. You know, so all of those and, you know, all of those dovetail, as does the fact that we've almost come to the point where we make Latino and undocumented synonyms. Huh. So, you know, on some level, you know, if you're Latino, again, the curse of the umbrella term, right, or you're Latinx, you're going to be undocumented. It gives you the right to then buy into this whole horrible narrative that keeps being put out there.
I'm also thinking, Nellie, that it's almost, I mean, within a week or two, a year since the Supreme Court's Obergefell decision making marriage equality a constitutional right, the law of the land. So, and this is Pride Month, of course. So is it, you know, one step forward and then a horror like something that happened in Orlando?
Absolutely. It is one step forward. You know, marriage equality was a tremendous step forward, but marriage equality was just one step in a march towards saving and empowering lives. We are anybody with a sense of the work that needs to be done knew that the second that decision came down, we needed to move to the next critical target. And there have been a lot of folks that weren't on the march towards marriage equality. You know, they've been doing the work all along. We have activists and advocates who have been fighting for people's lives all along. We have not – HIV and AIDS is still a – it's here, people. It is here, and it is disproportionately killing people, and we need to still be fighting to save lives. Marriage equality is wonderful. You know, the decision came down 6 days after I got married. I couldn't have been happier, but marriage equality won't save lives. Some would argue that it would because it forces people to learn and to accept. I would argue that there's – just so much more work that has to be done to save those lives. We have to recognize that there's just multiple movements, and that it's going. That's why it requires us coming together. It requires allies. We are all allies to somebody, whether or not you know it or not. I am a lesbian. I am not trans-identified, but I work as hard as I can to be an ally to those people. I work as hard as I can to be allies to multiple people. We've got to teach people how to do this. You can't just fight for yourself or your agenda. You must fight for the people who need you.
And interestingly, this School Reform Commission, this is here
That's right.
Philadelphia, just yesterday, I think last night, adopted a new policy, how the schools are going to deal with transgender students, including that they be addressed by the name that corresponds to their gender identity. They're able to participate in activities that correspond to their gender identity. Schools should use gender-neutral language when communicating. So, and on the other hand, there's something like 150, maybe as many as 200 policies and regulations in states across the country trying to reduce access to some of these issues of equality. So it's almost a perfect encapsulation of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we fight as hard as we can here in Philadelphia to do the right thing. And here, you know, we have these new rules that also protect people's transgender identity, the name that was given to them at birth or their assigned sex at birth, keep that as confidential so that they are able to go to school as who they are. They are able to use the bathroom that corresponds with how they identify. We know this is what we do in Philadelphia. It's what we've done for a very long time. It's profound and it's confusing to see hate-filled rhetoric used by politicians to shut doors and to put people in danger when we watch it work here every day. It works. Everybody's okay. Toilets operate by physics and everybody is safe. So we have laws. Every time I hear hate-filled rhetoric about how transgender people are going to go into bathrooms and hurt people, it is absolutely false. When transgender people are put into a bathroom that doesn't correspond with their gender identity, they are targeted. They are in danger. If anybody hurts somebody in a bathroom, whether or not it's a sexual assault or a physical assault, that's why we have the Pennsylvania Crimes Code. And as a former prosecutor, I can tell you, we will lock you up and we will charge you with the appropriate crimes. It just makes no sense. It flies in the face of common sense. And everybody who says that they want people to be safe in bathrooms, well, then let people use the bathroom that's appropriate for their gender identity. That's the only way they're going to achieve this big goal of theirs.
And that's Nellie Fitzpatrick, again, Director of LGBT Affairs for the City of Philadelphia. Sabrina Vavuyas, Metro columnist at Philadelphia Magazine. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Just a couple of more minutes before we have to end the show. So, Sabrina, what are you looking for? I mean, we're talking about certainly the events and what happened 5 days ago, but I do want to talk about moving forward. What are the lessons learned, and where do we go from here?
I think, you know, we need to beyond those who have been activists from years back and continue to do fantastic work, I think those of us who have been either in ally status or, you know, on the sidelines, sort of as people who feel like, you know, we cheered when marriage equity, when legislation was passed and so forth. We really need to involve ourselves in a very real and organic way. So, like I would say, you know, the Puerto Rican community here, the tradition, the mothers, grandmothers, aunts of people who could have very easily been in that nightclub, really need to let their religious leaders understand how devastating it is to not be able to have their children and their loved ones with them in a church sanctuary. And our community here, we pride ourselves on being tough. We bear a lot, and sometimes we don't speak up when we should. And, and I think that we need to be very aware of legislation within the state. We also need to understand that, you know, there are communities, for example, Reading, which is majority Latinx, that are, you know, also having vigils and pride celebrations that are maybe not as not as developed, not as really attended as Philadelphia's. And we need to look at the whole state in terms of where we can lend our support. But mostly we need to speak out.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned that mothers, grandmothers, and aunts should speak out. Should men speak out as well?
Yes, you know, I'm sorry.
No, I just had to check on that.
It's true. I'm very matrilineal, matrilocal.
This is still Pride Month.
It is.
Nellie.
It is.
So what happens for the rest of the month? And obviously there are things way beyond that.
Right. Well, Pride Month, for anybody who doesn't, the month of June is Pride. And when we talk about pride, it's pride in existing as who you are unapologetically, authentically, beautifully, and empowered. It is being proud and not being afraid. So throughout the month, it's important for folks to, especially in this time of grieving and fear, to remember that we cannot be afraid. For every one of those 49 people who died, we cannot be afraid.
What does that mean, not be afraid?
You cannot go back in the closet. You cannot be afraid to confront hard issues, hard topics, hard conversations, doing things like Sabrina said, calling upon religious leaders, calling upon allies, demanding justice, evaluating systems, building better policies. I hear people say on one hand, I don't like seeing this politicized. But on the other hand, we must politicize it. Politics, policy, laws, this controls our society. So we must use this moment to go forward. Not one of those people's death should be in vain. We must do more for them and for everybody who has died alone, holding a community member in a gay bar for who they are.
What will tell you if this is a turning point? And we've had other events, you know, tragic events in our past. We think, okay, this is a turning point. This is the point in which we're going to become a different country or a different place. What would tell you if this indeed was a turning point?
Some of the things that could tell me this is a turning point is to see the Pennsylvania legislator, Harrisburg, actually move on non-discrimination legislation, actually get it passed, to see the same thing happen at the federal level, to see people recognize that you do not need a semi-automatic weapon that can fire off 30 rounds in a split second to kill a deer, to see a recognizing that we do need to have limits and restrictions. This is real. Bullets are tearing apart our world. It is real. And it's how many more people have to die? How many more people have to die? So this is a turning point. And I will say that the LGBT community is one of the most resilient communities in the world, in my opinion. There is nothing more resilient than folks who face everything from discrimination and hate to death day after day after day. So we need to come together and tackle these issues. And we will. We are coming. We will come together. We will tackle the issues of discrimination, of hate, of racial injustice, of poverty, of immigration, and of gun control.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
Final word, 30 seconds for you, Sabrina.
Well, I think we need to see real change at the very top. As Latinx people, we need to know that we have real political power. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think this is a time for every political entity out there, every political hopeful, to understand that the fact that there are no Latinos at the top, making policy, helping to create policy for this nation, creates situations like this.
Well, we could go on. My thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Sabrina Vavoulias, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming in. Metro columnist at Philadelphia Magazine, Nellie Fitzpatrick, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Director of LGBT Affairs for the City of Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour Radio Times. Don't go away. Hour 2 coming up. We'll be right back.